Hello and welcome to Well, That's Weird, the podcast for me, your host, Joe, and I'm rejoined by the co-host, Duja, this time, and returning guest star, Jose. We're bringing you the wonderful world of the weird things that we find on the internet, the things that made us go, huh, that's not right. And today we're talking about heists. I think I'll start off because I think what I have is a great heist. And what I think of when I think of a great heist is one that there's two categories of weird heisting. There's a category where something is so big or something you just don't think of as something that could be stolen and then it gets stolen. The other thing is something that you don't think of as being a, like, people won't steal because why would you ever steal this? It's worth nothing. And I'm bringing you the stories of sand heisting, which I think fits both those categories.
Because like beach sand.
Beach sand. Not just like a little bit of beach sand, but in 2008, an entire beach got stolen. It was heisted right out of Coral Springs in Jamaica. They took over 1,300 feet of white sand from this beach in Jamaica, valued at over $108 million U.S. dollars in 2020.
Correct.
Apparently, this is a big...
Now, why did they only take the white sand? Is the white sand more valuable than the brown sand?
Who buys it? Who's like, I'm going to buy sand?
So the white sand specifically is stolen and is really valuable because it's Caribbean white sand. And if you're running a Caribbean island destination for like cruises and stuff, you want to have those beautiful white sand beaches, but they don't occur everywhere. And like they occur in places like Florida and Pensacola and Jamaica, but they might not occur in other places. You might not have a big enough beach at your resort.
So it's the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's all about the aesthetic. So you can buy sand, but that's expensive. Or you could pay some guys to go to a beach in northern Jamaica at night and take, like, how much was it? 500 truckloads of sand.
How do they do that? Wow. How does no one notice and hear all the commotion?
I have no idea. It like, there must have been so much.
How do you store the sand? How does the sand get stored? How do you transport it? Do you just put it on a boat?
I just put it on a boat and ship away and then take it to wherever it's going. Because, I mean, it's on a beach. It's going to a beach. So you could probably just put on a barge and truck the barge away.
Now, were the people who stole it got caught?
I don't think these people ever got caught. In the BBC article from 12 years ago, the investigation is still open. And the BBC says it's a very complex investigation because it involves so many aspects. It's also Jamaica, so it might not ever get solved.
So what is a beach or what does a sandless beach look like now?
It just looks like a port.
like
rocks.
Yeah, like is it just dirt now? Is it just mud?
They could do forensic testing. So like how they would eventually recover the sand, if they ever do recover the sand, and how sand has been recovered in other sand heists, is they do forensic tests where you look at the sand in a microscope and you can figure out like ratios of different sand grain sizes and sand grain composition. And then find new beaches where people have put sand that might have come from shady dealings, and then compare that sand to known samples from the beach that was stolen from. And then I guess you just put the sand back. Like, I don't know how you get compensated if, like, we just pay the people whose beach got ripped off.
But I feel like that forensics isn't accurate, because, like, what are the odds of you having similar sand in another place? Isn't that high?
I would think it's super high, but maybe not.
I'm also assuming they're mixing the white sand from one area with the white sands of other areas.
Yeah, if they're smart, they're going to mix it.
So the white sands and the black sands are valuable. What about the brown sands? I feel like
brown sand gets sold and stolen and sold again. Not because it's aesthetically pleasing for like beaches, but because it's really useful thing. Like most concrete reuses a lot of sand. And we're building a lot of stuff.
Don't we have a whole desert?
The sandy quarter, like the empty quarter of Saudi Arabia is mostly sand. But Saudi Arabia imports sand from Malaysia and Thailand, which a lot of it is illegally gotten. Because desert sand is really bad sand for building. Because it's formed from aeolian. So it's wind eroded, really smooth nodules of sand grains. And they don't stick together in cement very well. You want ocean sand or river sand.
Wow, okay.
I fell down a sand rabbit hole researching this.
I feel like I'm learning a lot. This is a very educational podcast. Yeah. Look at that, guys. I'm learning about white sand.
Some people describe the sand shortage, the upcoming sand shortage, on par with our upcoming water scarcity crisis, which I find that's a dubious
claim. That's a bit much.
Now, how will our civilization fall when there is no more sand to keep us going?
Turns out it's not the Rona. It's not nuclear warfare. It's just going to be us running out of sand.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see what happens when we run out of sand.
Anyway, that's my heist. So,
how do you make new sand? That's the next millionaire right there. Like you can make sand
stuff up. Like this seems like the sort of solution where explosives are the answer.
Jeff Bezos, get to it, boy. We're worrying about space and get to the bottom of the sea.
Oh, wasn't Elon selling the dirt? Like, he's building tunnels in L.A., and is he selling the dirt from his tunnels?
I have no idea, but Elon, he on a whole other level. I don't know. The boy out there.
Jose, do you want to go next, or do you want me to go next?
All right, we need this podcast to get big, because we need ad revenue, so I can buy a flamethrower.
A flamethrower?
Yes.
Hey guys, let's start a GoFundMe for Joe. He wants a flamethrower. We can do it. Everyone donates $1, buy one flamethrower. Don't let him down.
Don't let him down.
I'm counting on listener.
It's like the Feed the Children Fund, except it's Joe crying without a flamethrower. He just has a candle in his hand.
He's got Sarah McLachlan in the background.
Okay, anyway, Jose, do you want to go next? Do you want me to go next?
I'll go next because I have to dip out after my story.
No.
Hey guys. Okay. So shout out to This American Life. This is where I learned about this crazy heist called the Feather Heist. So for those people out there who don't know what fly fishing is, it involves using special lures that are supposed to look like invertebrates. So what people love to use as lures are the birds, feathers from birds. There was this young guy. He took the feathers. And he made them into lures. Oh, God, I'm going crazy right now because I'm a little worried. Okay, cut some of this stuff out, DJ, later on.
Okay.
There was this young guy who was really interested in making these lures. He was really good in making knots for them so he could catch these little fishy guys out there. But it's really, in the fly fishing community, it's really a point of pride if you have special feathers from a lot of times from birds that have gone extinct or birds that are endangered. And it's actually illegal to sell these because a lot of these birds are close to endangered or on the endangered species list. This one guy decided to break into a museum in England and steal a whole bunch of feathers from birds that were caught from by Alfred Wallace. So if you don't know who that guy is, he was actually the second person to discover the theory of evolution just right under Darwin.
Didn't he also discover Indonesia?
What happened?
Did he discover Indonesia, or was he just like an old dude who got there?
No, he was not old. He didn't discover it. He would just go out there and collect a whole bunch of specimens, and then because he was the opposite of Darwin. He grew up poor. He would go over there, collect a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of specimens. He would bring them back to the UK, and then he would sell them, and that's how he made his money. Because a lot of it was like, oh. Like, he would bring these rare animals, these rare insects and bugs, and he would sell them off to collectors.
Cool.
And that's how he would make his money.
How did he break into the museum without getting caught?
So, this happens when you have rent-a-cops who aren't really doing their jobs, and this guy was able just to slide by through to get them. And he actually stole a whole bunch of birds. He took, and they didn't even realize for like days that these birds were gone because, you know, eventually he did trip an alarm, but like nobody thought he stole, like nobody ever thought to check the bird collection, right? They were like, let's make sure the actual stuff in the museum that's really valuable is still here. And of course that's all there. He stole these birds. He started making new lures for people in the fly fishing community. He was selling them like extravagant prices, like people who, like mega rich people, were buying these special lures that he was making from feathers from. Eventually, when the cops figured out this guy wasn't the best crook, he eventually got caught because the way he was selling them online, people really eventually tracked him down. But unfortunately, the damage was done by then, and a lot of times they weren't ever able to recover the bird itself, or they would recover a bird with basically all the feathers missing. Which at that point, the bird really doesn't hold any more value to it as far as the scientific community, because a lot of times when people study birds, one of the things they're studying is the feathers and size of feathers and the color patterns of feathers and things like that. If you go to This American Life and you can actually listen to the little asshole who stole these feathers, he's a jerk. I hope that guy lives a miserable life. What happened to him?
They caught him.
They caught him, and I think he got like a slap on the wrist, if I remember correctly.
He didn't go to jail?
No, he was able to wheedle himself out, because I think, well, I don't want to go into this part, because it was just, he was, I think there was like some mental illness stuff going on with him, but he was able to wheedle himself out. He never apologized either for committing the crime, which was really fucked up.
What a jackass.
The guy, if you go to This American Life and listen to The Feather Heist, I think I have the episode pulled up. Episode 654, guys, The Feather Heist. They actually interview the heist, and he's such a little asshole. He doesn't ever apologize. He thinks what he did was okay. But also, who knew feathers were really, really important out there? You know, who knew they had so much value? That's the more you know.
That was a good one, Jose. So, I have a Duja. Turn around. You can't see this. Anyway, I have a very Duja one, and then I have a very Joe one. So, I'll start with the very Duja one and then end on a lighter note. So, the one I'm doing is the pizza heist. Do you know this one?
I do not. Okay. Is this related to Pizzagate?
No.
Okay.
But it's disturbing. So in 2003, there was a guy named Brian Wells, and he was a pizza delivery guy. He got a phone call, and someone was like, hey, deliver this pizza to me at this address. So he goes there, and when he goes to the address, there's these two guys who come up to him with guns, and they put a large metal collar on his neck with a time bomb attached to it.
Oh, my.
So then they hand him a note, and they're like, go to this bank, and you need to rob it, and complete these various tasks.
Oh, this accelerated way faster than I thought it would.
So it includes delivering the cash to a specific location, and he was told that if he completed each task within a certain time limit, the bomb won't explode. So later on...
What movie is this based on?
No, this is a true story.
Well, what movie got based on this, then?
I have no idea.
This sounds like Jigsaw. What's the Jigsaw movie?
Saw.
Saw?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then... So then they're like, hey, if you finish all these tasks within the time limit, the bomb won't explode. But later on, investigators found out that no matter what, the bomb was going to explode regardless of if he did the test or not. So as he's doing all this stuff, they find out that the collar is... Okay, the reason they did the collar was when it exploded was to kill off any witnesses as well. So that's the big reason. And then after having the collar on him... He goes to rob a bank with a homemade shotgun, which they gave him, and he demanded $250,000, but he only left with less than 10 grand. So police apprehended him right outside the bank, and while being threatened by the police, he was telling him, hey, dude, like, I have this collar on my neck. I'm not part of this. Da-da. Bomb squad was called, but they took so long. Eventually, bomb squad came, and it took at least half an hour. And then when they came, it was 3 minutes too late. At 3:18, the bomb detonated on his neck, blowing, obviously, everywhere. And he died at the scene. And the footage of the explosion was broadcast on live television, so you could probably find that somewhere disturbing.
When was this?
2003. Two of the conspirators that were part of this were charged and convicted in 2007. Kenneth Barnes and Marjorie Armstrong were sentenced to only 40 years and 30 years behind bars, respectively. So Marjorie got lower time. And they both claimed upon arrest that Wells was conspiring with them to rob the bank and that he assumed the bomb would be fake.
That is a story.
Yeah, that's Pizza Heist. They have a lot of documentaries
How did Wells get involved? He just ordered a pizza?
He was the pizza delivery man.
He's a pizza man.
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
That is terrible. Never go outside. That's the lesson from that story.
Don't ever interact with anyone you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's really sad. Like, he was just doing his job and wanted a tip or something. And then they're like, hey, rob this bank or you're going to explode. Now for a lighter one.
We need a lighter one.
Okay, so this one is called Dirk the Penguin. And this one's really fucking good. So there was three British guys and they got really fucking plastered. And they broke into SeaWorld in Australia. Once they broke in, they climbed over the security fence. And first they swam with dolphins, because that's what everyone's dream is to do drunk. This was their downfall. They started to disturb Dirk the sleeping penguin, and they stole him. When they stole him the next day, they woke up in their apartment and they realized that there's a fucking penguin in their room and they didn't know what to do. So this is the sad part. The penguin was really hungry and obviously disturbed. And the three of them just kind of like shoved him in a lagoon and was like, whatever, we don't know what to do with this. And then they were later identified. Prosecutors told the prosecutors, hey, it was just a prank. Like, this wasn't meant for anything.
That's a terrible defense.
And one of the three men said, quote, still a bit fuzzy about the whole thing, but on behalf of all three of us, we're very sorry, and it was just a prank that went too far. And apparently, Dirk made a full recovery and is back with his fellow penguins at SeaWorld.
I feel like the appropriate thing to do in that is when you wake up in your hotel room and you have a penguin that was not there the night before, like, you just have to own up to it, call SeaWorld, and explain to them what happened.
Or you keep it as a pet.
I could keep a penguin as a pet.
Why, they're so cute.
They smell really bad.
I never smelled a penguin.
You ever been to, like, an aquarium with penguins?
Yeah, but the whole aquariums just stink, and zoos just stink all the time. Because of the
penguins.
No, it's not. It's
all penguin.
I'm pretty sure that's not what it is. Oh, Joe.
Have you ever seen the documentary A Year on Ice, Antarctica?
No. Is it sad?
No, it's really good.
Oh.
Like, highly recommend this documentary. It's about the scientists who live in McMurdo
mm-hmm.
in Antarctica. But there's a scene where they talk to a bunch of scientists about what they think of penguins, and they all hate penguins.
Why?
Because penguins, they're kind of like Canada geese. Like, they're just everywhere. They're not allowed to interact with them because it's all scientists and, like, a science research base. And they just poop everywhere and smell bad, make a lot of noise, and, like, get into stuff.
I like it. They're the dream. I like penguins. There's another thing. Oh, Mary Poppins has penguins.
Mary Poppins
and they wear great outfits.
Do you ever watch The Backyardigans and know Pablo the Penguin?
Yes. I mean, I don't watch it now.
I mean, obviously. I would hope not.
I mean, I assume you do now. Do you ever watch? Like, you don't do now?
Are you up to date on all your Backyardigans lore?
Joe.
You got Uniqua, the pink one.
I know that one.
Tyrone the Moose.
This is just going downhill. Joe, what's our sponsor?
Our sponsor is The Backyardigans on Nick Jr. The Backyardigans on Nick Jr., 867 Central.